Freedom song, freedom song. I got to sing my freedom song. I love my people, oh, I love us.
Looking for a holiday gift that gives back this season? Check out the new Ferguson Response Holiday Guide, a listing of verified gift ideas and donation links benefiting organizers and organizations working hard in the movement for Black Lives. Got that cousin who would love an Asada Taught Me hoodie, or that geeky sister that could use a Black Girls Code t-shirt? All that and more are included in the guide. How about that aunt who prefers to have donations made in her name? We have a long list of organizers to support, like Ryan Brown, a college senior who organizes on her campus as well as in her hometown of Cleveland, Ohio. Ryan was one of the protesters who interrupted Hillary Clinton this summer, demanding Secretary Clinton stop accepting campaign donations from the private prison industry. As a first-generation college student, Ryan is determined to get her degree while staying true to her principles. Wouldn't Aunt Denise love to know that she helped Ryan buy her school books this semester? Visit FergusonResponseHolidayGuide.com for all of your movement-minded gift-giving needs. Again, FergusonResponseHolidayGuide.com. And now let's get to the Interracial John podcast.
John with Drew and Leslie, get the shit on. Interracial John, shut the fuck up and listen. Interracial John, interracial John, interracial shit motherfuckers, shut up and listen. Drew and Leslie, interracial John.
Oh, shout out to my brother.
Crap, that is.
He's actually quite a talented singer and plays piano and is a director of a choir and went to school, like full musical scholarship. And but he's very shy. He didn't want to record anything.
Hold up.
I'm quite drunk.
Welcome to the Interracial John podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined as always
by a very white guy.
And you're very white indeed. Okay, so yeah, so that was
my bro,
gracious little brother who is here visiting us this week, and we got him to do some singing for us, which was awesome. How are you today?
I'm good.
That's good.
How are you doing? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm on sabbatical.
I know, I can tell.
Chilling.
Relaxing and maxing.
Like a villain. Well, if this is your first time listening to us, welcome. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. Or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. Please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. That helps us go up in the rankings and helps more people see us. We appreciate that.
Illustrious 15th listener.
That's right. And you can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, at Interracial John. Again, that's J-A-W-N. And we love feedback.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, before I say that, though, on Twitter, we have now decided to start using the official hashtag of the Interracial John, which is just the John. So hashtag T-H-E-J-A-W-N, hashtag the John. Yeah. And we do love feedback. Facts. And you can.
And we take it well.
Yeah.
It can be critical. You can critique.
You can.
We'll take it.
Yes. You totally can. You can leave us feedback in so many different ways. You can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. So you can just search for us on any of your iTunes devices, or you can Google us. Literally, Interracial John will come up on Stitcher as well, and you can just leave a review there. If it's 5 stars, we'll read it on the air, which is awesome.
And if you're really lucky, we'll do like voices and shit.
Instructions as to what the voice.
Oh yeah, you could do it. You could do it. You could be like stage right, stage left, like asterisk, no, like white guy like, voice.
Yeah, white girl voice, or like, you know, whatever, whatever.
I like your Becky voice.
My Becky voice is good. You can also email us. You can send that to interracialjohn, again, JAWN@gmail.com, and you can pick up the phone right now and just call us. You can leave us a voicemail at 657-JOHNERS. That's 657-JAWNERS. And if it's under 3 minutes and not crazy, we will play it here on the air, too. So look at all of that. Lots of ways.
Look at that.
Shout out to Karen and Rod from the Black Who Tips for our general feedback rules. And we actually have 3 different kinds of feedback today.
We do?
So it's kind of exciting.
That is exciting.
Yeah.
Get started. What do we got?
I thought we had a review.
Oh, we do? I didn't know if we wanted to start with that.
That's the first thing we should do.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
You don't got to sing this one, though.
I know.
One, two, three, four, ain't got shit. 5-star.
That's another Matt original he recorded. Our new, brand new 5-star review song.
And I got to give it to Chonilla, our friends Sharon Cole, because they were the ones that I think first I realized were using their kids.
Right. So we started using our nieces and nephews. It's nice. Like our great nieces.
Yeah, I love
the
it.
The news. She does our news bit. The girls do.
It's like GOP a little bit of them every time we do the podcast.
It's great.
A little bit of family.
So thanks again.
But we do have a 5-star review.
But we have a review.
Yes,
so
from Tasha B. Thank you, Tasha B. Tasha B says, Leslie Mack and Very White Guy, the married interracial couple that make up the Interracial John team, are not. Emphasis hers, not going to allow you to stay asleep and unconscious on matters of importance regarding racism and intersectional feminism. If you want to continue slumber in the comfort of cognitive dissonance and willful ignorance, you may want to pass this podcast by. If you like fresh perspectives that make your mind pop, then get thank you for the sound effect. Make your mind pop.
Oh, I'll do it again.
Yeah, make your mind pop. Then give this a listen. They are factual, funny, fair, and balanced, but you may want to leave your feelings at home.
Leave them at home.
This is a, though, it's for a noble cause to keep you socially educated and emotionally alert, so it's okay. The wokest white guy on the planet, well, hey, wait. Oh, that's her words. Her words. Huge fucking asterisk air quotes. The wokest white guy on the planet has teamed up with and married. And she put that in parentheses. Like, maybe
just
she's
so
not confirmed.
Know, we're not just teamed up.
Yeah,
man.
We're married
up in her.
Official. A black female activist of Jamaican descent.
Big up.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Well, hold on. Jamaican descent. To give me a podcast that I anxiously await for them to post every 7 to 10 days. Well, thank you, Tasha B.
Thanks, Tasha B.
Appreciate the love.
Appreciate that. So somebody also called us.
Yeah, I just want to like reiterate. I'm taking
you're not
like,
the wokest.
Yeah, taking significant umbrage
with the wokest.
I don't want that label. No. I ain't near that label. It's I appreciate
How
you.
About
thank
just
you, Tasha. That she knows
slightly woke.
No, I'll let that she knows.
Yeah, she knows.
I don't know who, what kind of woke people she got in her life.
All right, well, here we go. We have a voicemail, so let's play that guy. Here we go.
Hello, Drew and Leslie. My name's Aaron. I'm calling from the Pacific Northwest. I got to say that I love this podcast. It was my first ever podcast that I ever listened to.
Oh.
I just sort of started listening to podcasts because I wanted to hear more diverse voices, and I love the sound effects that y'all do.
Sigh.
I just love the opinions. I love how cohesively y'all put things together. That's something I really enjoy in a podcast, other than having good sound, of course.
Oh.
Now, in your second to last podcast episode, Apology DQ. Drew, this question is for you. You talked about white guilt and how you went through that. And also being a white person, I wondered how you were able to get past that white guilt phase besides talking to more black people or just reading more and studying more. And I'm pretty new to reading about anti-blackness. So I just wondered how you got through that.
Well, first, thank you for acknowledging the two components of the show that I'm responsible for, the sound quality and the sound effects. I'm really going to give myself a ding for that. But I wasn't ready to get all serious, but
That's a question.
It's a question.
There you go.
I would say I can't speak for anyone and everyone. I would say for me personally, it absolutely was a phase, and it kind of like it was a little bit like obsessively devouring information and wanting to, like, you know, there was like moments where I'd be like, oh my God, and this is anti-black too. And oh my God, look at this is anti-black too. Like it, like the, it was like coming out of the Matrix. The more you see supremacists, you know, the anti-black and white supremacist worldview has shaped so many things in so many ways. And then, like, you know, you start to see that and you're like, holy cow, like, I can't believe I really didn't pay attention. Didn't notice that before. And there's definitely a, I'm consuming a lot of that. I'm feeling very, like, you know, guilty, and I want to do something, and I'm like, oh, like, what, I gotta do something. I feel so bad. And that, I think invariably, at least for me, and I think I've seen it in other people too, leads to a little bit of like white knighting and like white savior kind of stuff, where you're like, oh, like, you know, this systemic oppression has been around for a couple millennia, but now that I'm here, let's get it done. And I'm just very fortunate that I have a wife that, and I wouldn't just say wife, that my wife and I, that Leslie and I, have a relationship in which we can have conversations, and she can say things. And truthfully, there was, you know, like, you know, there wasn't like a point where it's like, oh my God, Drew, you're off the deep end, you're going crazy. But, you know, there was maybe a good 2 week period where, over that 2 weeks, Leslie said, maybe on two or three different occasions in various softer ways, like, you know, like, hey, you know, maybe you should, like, you know, take it down and decompress a little bit. Like, you know, this is, you're not acting, you know, you're a little bit obsessed, like this guilt, you know, it's a little much, it's a little much. And she finally came around and she's like, Drew, just, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. It's kind of, it's just, you know, it's what white people do, but it's white savory, and you act like this. And it's like, you know, you're, it's new to you, but it's not new to me or any other black person or fucking hundreds of thousands of other people who live on this earth. You know, so, but it wasn't in a mean way, but she did kind of check me. And I probably couldn't have heard that or seen that from someone else. I would have instantly gone into like white fragile, like defense mode. Like, no, it's not. Why are you saying that? You know, I've been fucking reading all this stuff, and now it's blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, whatever we do as white people. So I guess I don't know the solution, but I would say try to think of when you're in that guilt phase, just what purpose does it serve? You know, and
that's what I was going to say.
For me, the really, the big turning point, as you said, like, hey, you're having this kind of issue. And at, in that, started a discussion, a dialogue, and in that dialogue, we're like, well, what, you know, really, who's it for? Is it help the movement? Does it help liberate black folk? Is it helping wake other white people, or is it just for you and your feelings? And to what purpose does that serve? And, you know, if you come to a pretty logical conclusion that feeling guilty about it is totally, it's beyond irrelevant. It's even kind of centering, you know, and something that we do a lot. So I don't begrudge white folks for it. I did it myself within the last 2 years, right? Like my, you know, quote unquote, I wouldn't say awakening, but more active after Mike Brown's execution. And, you know, that phase was shortly thereafter, probably somewhere in August or September of 2014. So I don't begrudge people that feel that way. I think it's a perfectly, I don't want to say normal. It is a perfectly normal, but like I joked about doing the Erickson like stages of like woke whiteness, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And guilty phase would be one.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I think as a, you know,
I think there's stages within guilt too. Sure. It's not even just like one stage.
Well, and I this is going to sound maybe weird, but I feel like of the people I know personally in my life, like people I can vouch for, I know like, okay, this is a white person that I've met and I've interacted with, and I know this person. It's doing work that's active, that's made their, you know, commitment to this work. If they didn't have a guilty phase, I'd kind of almost question it.
Right.
You know, like, well, what is your personal connection to it that, you know, is you're this, let's just say action oriented. You're a white abolitionist. You're right. You're this committed, but you don't have any black people in your life. You don't have any, you know what I'm saying? And then you didn't feel some sort of way. I think weird about that. Maybe. I don't know.
Anyways, that's your answer?
Yeah, but just understand that guilt is pointless. And I understand that the emotion is real. I shouldn't say that the emotion is pointless. But, you know, dwelling on that emotion, it doesn't do any good. And it is a little centering. And it's, again, something I think a lot of white people do. I did it, right? Not even that long ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, let her finish up here.
Also, this question is for both of you. What are some of your problematic favorites? And that's all I have to say. So have a great day. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
What does that mean, problematic favorites?
I guess people that we like that are problematic in one way or another. Maybe like music.
I need more info on that. If we're looking for like guilty pleasure type stuff or like assholes.
I'd say.
So Aaron, write us back or tweet us Interracial John, and we'll finish up that second part of the question. We need a little clarification before I deem any answers.
I'll just say off the bat, my boy, my smooth mustache. He's like my best friend. I love him. But he's
problematic as fuck. Yeah,
well, and it's not just that he's problematic, and there's this weird kind of like, I won't say weird. I'm sure someone's done studies about it and there's psychology about it, about groupthink behavior. But if you're with a bunch of people that are saying something, it's easy to kind of like head nod and go along versus to be like, well, wait a minute. I don't like what you just said. That's problematic for this way or that way.
Right.
And I think the white fragility response to a lot of things is that way. Like if you're in a group of people that act in a fragile way, you're going to act in a fragile way. If you're in a group of people that say, hey, don't act fragile, this is like this, you're going to, oh, yeah, you're right. I do think that.
Right.
And I think Ms. Smooth Mustache is that way. And I think he's hanging out with some young.
I think most people are like that.
Very young folks.
But that person, I'm not going to talk about it right now. Anyways, we also got an email from Peace She Said, at Peace She Said on Twitter. And thank you for that. Subject is Amy.
We knew that was like, dum, dum, dum.
She says, hi, y'all. Here's my take on her. If you guys missed the last episode, we talked about Amy Steven, who is a person on Twitter who had, I don't know what else to call it except for a white supremacist meltdown on Twitter this past week.
Someone called it hashtag infamy.
Yeah, well, we talked about it a little bit last week. We're going to talk about some more, but here we go. So here's, this is what, as I said, Peace She Said says. Okay. Hi, y'all. Here's my take on her. I'm very new to Twitter, but my interest grew after Ferguson. I follow numerous activists now and have become more quote-unquote woke than I could imagine. I followed Amy because she seemed to be like me, older white woman trying to support Black Lives Matter. I rarely engage people. I mainly retweet / fave. But one day in early November, she posted an article for Mother Jones about gun violence. It was immediately after the first Colorado shooting. The pic was of an armed civilian at the scene of the Chattanooga shooting. It was labeled as such, but she tweeted the pic as if it were the Colorado shooter. And her wide following began retweeting horrified responses. And then, as now, she would retweet over and over. I and others pointed out her mistake, which she acknowledged, but continued to retweet. I decided to DM her so as not to drag her out, you know? I mentioned my background in journalism and how facts matter. I said I understood how she could have made the mistake. I was careful and diplomatic. I said that since we were allies, I felt it was important that we maintain integrity in our cause. She didn't and was defensive as hell, so much like what I've seen the last few days. We left as agreeing to disagree, but I muted her at that point. And now this, it has turned nasty. She's scary and damaging, honestly. I don't think she even knows what she believes. Sad for a woman of our age. She lacks logic and reasoning. And here's my psych major talking. It's probably textbook narcissist, maybe more pathology there. Or maybe she's just a troll. And she may be hippie, but she's no hippie. Thank you for reading my diatribe and thank you for your work. Peace.
Well, you know, I didn't know, man, there's just patterns. And right now you're talking about the pattern of doing some twisted, fucked up shit. Somebody
that harms black people.
Let's
be clear.
Some twisted, fucked up, anti-black, some twisted, fucked up shit, regardless of intent, whose outcome, those actions outcome harms black people or exposes them to trauma and harm. And when called out upon it, just sort of like, kind of eschewing that information and continuing to do the problematic behavior. And there was a Storify, you can include it in maybe the show links. I don't think it's, you know, we need to go through it here on the show because we're going to talk specifically about this
right now,
this most recent meltdown.
Yeah.
But this, you know, you had issues perhaps with Amy a while ago. Your radar was up a while ago.
I was like, don't like her and I don't want anything to do with
her. In fact, I think you even were like at more than one point, like, dude, look at this. What the hell is this? Go talk to your friend Amy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is over a year ago. There was some, I guess, back and forth about a feminist issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know exactly what the story of Fire Eyes. But so there's a pattern now, I guess, of being called out and handling it poorly. But let's – I want to talk more specifically about this most recent incident.
Yeah.
And I don't know quite how far back it goes, whether it's weeks or months. And I think that's irrelevant. But I want to do a nice timeline of facts, you and I, so we can confirm and just say, okay, this is what happened.
Right. And I also would like to just preface this by saying that we won't be talking about this on Twitter.
Ever again.
Or anywhere else.
Her 15 minutes are done.
This is it.
Yeah,
so,
way done. Long done.
But some of the things that she did today, like, I really didn't even want to talk about it too much today. I was just going to, like, give an update more. But the shit that happened today and the past couple of days has just reached, like, completely disgusting levels that I just feel like it's important to get the facts on the record and just make
oh yeah,
because sure
she's using lies because, and
she's
mistruths
just
and
completely
she
lying.
Contradicts herself within a span of about 36 hours. Yeah. You know, all kinds of fucked up shit.
So timeline,
I would say, and this is interesting because this is the point she thinks we're all mad about, which is really erroneous. The first thing she decides is I don't want to be succumbing to the liberal echo chamber. I wanted to understand and listen to other points of views, expand my sort of thoughts, and that, you know, very well may include conservative folks, right?
So, and she stems this from a report that came out that illustrated that people on both the liberal and the conservative side are in silos. They never listen to each other. They never interact with each other. They never have to consider the other side's position because they don't ever even interact with them on social media and otherwise.
Sure. And okay. So now said white woman this is the reality.
But even if it is her solution, she's going to fix it, is that she's going to step out of the quote unquote liberal echo chamber and start following conservatives and engaging with them in order to like understand their point of view.
And in this area of the timeline, there was definitely people that were like, you know, hey, whatever you want, fine, but that might not have the consequences you think, so forth and so on. And then there was some knowledge where it was like, wait a minute, you're connecting with kind of like known avowed white supremacists. Not just like maybe this person's a white supremacist, like, no, I'm not even going to state their handle on this show. Like the most horrid of the white supremacists that tweet things like images of nooses and the N-word and, you know, how to, you know, hang an N-word and like really horrible, horrible, fucked up shit, right? And people start saying like, hey, you know, what about this? And even in this moment, she's saying, my tweet was about conservatives. My tweet was about conservatives. There was even a tweet where he says, I don't know any white supremacists, right? Says this, a tweet specifically, I don't know any white supremacists. Yet this person that like, and I'm saying like, she's not just hanging out with, like, having like Twitter exchanges with, and like at one point wrote like, I think he's funny, and, you know, really like about a really horrible white supremacist.
She says about this person, I do consider Ricky a friend. In my opinion, he's racist, but the title of Nazi and white supremacist has been thrust upon him and others. That's a quote from a tweet of her. And so again, she says he's a racist, but I'm friends with him.
And he's making
and then doesn't see why black people would be like, hey, I thought you were an ally of ours. I thought you were
correct
in solidarity with us. I thought that you were somebody that we could count on in spaces like this to have our backs. And to
absolutely
not be citing and amplifying the voices of somebody who actively hates us as a people.
The narrative at this juncture was continuing of this, that we need to build a bridge. We need to build a bridge. And people of color, and many people, myself included, were like, there's a group of people that don't deserve a seat at the table.
Right.
The bridge is cut off for like avowed white supremacists and racist people. They've lost the chance to be a part of this dialogue in this table. There's no reason to include
them. I specifically and pointedly asked her, I said, I understand your point about reaching across the aisle to engage with conservatives, but white supremacists and conservative are not the same thing on here.
No.
And I would like you to tell me what benefit there is in you engaging with racists and white supremacists. That's what I want to know.
Honestly,
and she blocks me.
At this point, I asked her to DM me. I said, let's, you know, I want to privately talk to you. And she said, no. No, I don't want to DM. Do it publicly, please. I'm like, okay, fine. We'll talk publicly. And I had, you know, maybe like 7 or 8 tweets, but I ended it with that the Bernard Hess's 8 stages of predominant white racial identity, and the concept being that like white people you know, there really isn't a like white racial identity. We don't have like a cultural like this is what it is to be white kind of thing. But there are eight ways of being white as it relates to white supremacy specifically. And on the one end of this, you know, I guess it's like a spectrum continuum, whatever it is white supremacists, like, you know, avowed white supremacists. On the other end is white abolitionists, right? And I send this to Amy. I'm like, listen, I just, to me, there's no value in the very bottom of this, of these eight stages of white racial identity. The bottom two, there's just fucking no purpose. Like, it's stage one and two, but it's the bottom of, because it's white supremacists, right? Like, just, why are you doing this? And there's going to be consequences doing this, and you're going to be causing harm. And at this time, again, I'm only thinking, it's just like, the fuck is she doing talking to people? And here's, I say there's so many things that are wrong, but this, I think, hasn't even been addressed specifically. The people that at this juncture that were talking to her, she was so fucking condescending to black people, like white-splaining shit, and this whole like, I know, you don't know, I've got the information. And my seven or eight tweets responded with like, thank you, I appreciate it, I'll reflect on this. You know, like the whole, like, the white person says it in a way, she's like, okay, a black person, and I read a lot of these black folks that were tweeting her, there was nothing that got like angry or vitriol or sideways. And even if it did, fucking A, that's our job to interpret the message free of that emotion. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And it just, it was gross that she was responding to people like you in a fucked up negative way, and then to like very white guy like, okay, I'll take that on advisement, thanks. And as soon as she says take that on advisement, within like an hour and a half, she's hammering at fucking people. You know, she didn't even stop. I noticed I go back to my job, and she's hammering at people again, blocks you. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
So the other thing she was doing was any black person that critiqued her, she would not reply to them but retweet them.
Correct.
What this did was it sent all of these white supremacists that she has befriended and begun having exchange and communication with into the mentions of these black people, making racist death threats, rape threats against women and feminists. Like, it got really ugly. And people were like, yo, what the fuck? Why are you retweeting these?
She has dozens
things?
And dozens of white supremacists, including this one, Ricky, and a few other really like large, bad white supremacists have like tens of thousands of followers. And they follow her, okay? And a little Twitter like 106 lesson for everybody. You ever notice when some people put the period in front of their tweets? The reason they put the period is because if the tweet starts with an at symbol, Twitter deems that a conversation between me and someone else. And only my followers will see my end of the conversation, or only, you know, people that follow us both will actually see the conversation. Whereas if I tweet anything before the at symbol, period is the laziest form of this, period at the person, it's now a public tweet that goes on my timeline to anyone that follows me, okay? That's why people do the period. Amy's not dumb. She fucking knows what she's doing when she retweets somebody versus actually responding to that person, right? If she had responded to that person using the at symbol first, she's engaging in ostensibly a one-on-one dialogue. When she retweets the critique and then has that one-on-one dialogue, it's a goddamn fucking bat signal to white supremacists that are following her. And it worked. It fucking worked. White supremacists came out of the fucking woodwork at fucking black people all over the place. It was, and to me, like, she thinks we're all mad at, like, who she talks to. No.
Nobody gives a fuck who you talk to, bitch.
Not at all.
Your problem was how you reacted to
Absolutely.
People's concerns
Absolutely.
About who you were following and refusing to listen to black people. And we're like, we don't give a fuck who you talk to, but don't be out here trying to claim that you're about the movement and whatever. And then, by your own words, I must say, again, be friends with a racist. That's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, and she again, these weird things that call it a lie, call it a hypocrisy, call it a contradiction, whatever you want, says things like, I don't know any white supremacists. And then a couple of days later, I've known Weave for 10 years. Weave is like, you can just Google W-E-E-V, worst of the fucking worst. Doesn't even live in the United States anymore. Like, literally, I don't know white supremacists, and then I've known them for 10 years. Says repeatedly, I don't know what you're doing. I'm not sicking my white supremacist
I don't
trolls.
Know anything you're doing.
I don't
doing.
Know anything
for,
you're talking
for
about.
Hours,
I don't
she gaslights
you're talking
black
about.
People
I don't
saying,
know anything you're talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Then,
those people aren't don't have anything
do have
to
the,
do with me.
Do you have the
and
Ricky
then she tweets out, after 6 or 7 hours of literally, when all the black people that were engaging with her are like, yo, I have all these white supremacists in my mentions that have never been here before because you retweeted me, what the fuck, and saying, claiming ignorance, feigning ignorance, 6 hours of this. She then posts, if you would pass on to your folks, Ricky, to just back off these folks, I would appreciate it. Enough. Let's go on.
Let's. Wow. Look at that. Let's. fucking, that's a we, man.
And the,
that's
a fucking we, enough, man. The enough means that she fucking call knew. This off. And she was telling them enough. So don't fucking come out here trying to pretend like you're some goddamn victim when you orchestrated all of this stuff, allowed black people to get harassed and terrorized online, and then you are now trying to make it seem like they're just mad because they followed one person.
Yeah.
Bitch, please. Seriously.
No. Well, so then this goes on like, I don't know into what part of what day, but so a bunch of fucking people, like, you know, I don't say they start like hitting me up, but people I know, like white people, like, what should we do? We should be calling, you know, crazy cousin Cletus and Amy, like, you know, like what is this, what is that? And there's people talking about, you know, hashtags and public shaming, this or that. And someone started by Amy. Hashtag by Amy. And it was basically just like, you know, hey, you know, see ya. We're done. We're out. I'm done. And I saw a bunch of people tweeting on it and people I know and you know, care about. And I think that saw her through what all this bullshit was. And so I decided to put, you know, and maybe I went too far with too many tweets, a little bit, you know, part of my ego went too much into like talking to her. But again, it was just like pretty polite about it. Like, please consider that you're doing this, that you're actively harming black people by retweeting this and exposing them to your white supremacist followers. You know, please consider this. And she fucking got so fucking salty, man. Like, just immediately, like, this is crazy. I don't even know where this is coming from. You know, I thought I knew you, you know. And then all the white supremacists, you know, like you said, I've never seen more white supremacist trolls in my mentions than the last 24 hours after this bullshit with Amy. I'm not talking like after the Mike Brown verdict. Literally, I've never seen so many fucking white supremacist trolls. And they're all defending her. They're all defending her, dude. And it's just, it's so gross. It's so gross. You know? And she just, she got, I think she got unhinged. And so now that she's got like unhinged, white supremacist folks are holding her up as some sort of like poster child of this Marxist conspiracy theory, cultural Marxist conspiracy theory. And like, first time someone threw that shit at me, I had to like look it up. And it's basically like their opinion of PC culture gone amok. That you know, you're like language Nazis, quote unquote. And that, you know, look at what, you know, and they're calling Black Lives Matter movement a cult now, by the way, right? And saying Amy has left the cult or she dared stray from the cult. And the phrase they literally used is they performed a high-tech lynching of Black Lives Matter activist Amy Steven for, you know, daring to go against the movement cult or whatever. It's just, it's so gross. It's so fucking gross. Like she there's a fucked up meme about her from like ally to fucking, you know, whatever. And it's like a really like, I wouldn't say it's ugly, but like she made it her profile picture.
Yeah, it's really
like,
bad.
What the fuck are you like, what purpose does that make?
It's really bad. And then she started saying a bunch of other really fucked up stuff.
Well, she just early retweeted and said she doesn't think Nazis are Nazis and white supremacists aren't white supremacists. They're just labeled that way.
Yeah.
So what does she think they are? Friends? Buddies? Misunderstood?
Right. And then she has this exchange about immigration earlier today. Someone posted, at what point does immigration become invasion? Okay. And Amy...
Someone with a white genocide supremacist, yes, fucking mindset.
Mindset. Amy replies, interesting question. And a black follower says... No, it's not interesting. It's the opposite of interesting. It's the same boring question racists have been asking since forever. Amy asks, how so? Person replies, borders are political structures. Human beings are not. How is this hard to understand? Amy's final response, that's simple to understand. Doesn't explain how many people have to cross your border before significantly changing culture.
What? That, literally, she's fucking... pushing a, like a white genocide narrative, man. And I said that in my tweet, like, you know, to her on the Buy Amy hashtag, that a lot of her fucking shit was, whether she intended it or not, was literally like parroting a white supremacist narrative, you know, like literally parroting the exact same way white supremacists talk about certain things, right? Like what she's talking about is white genocide, and she's putting a different fucking like, I don't know what, like a fucking try to sell it to fucking progressive spin. I'm not sure. But the entire fucking like I'm under attack for just saying, you know, I want to hang out with these people is complete bullshit. It's a lie. But again, that narrative of, you know, I'm I'm a white supremacist, and this is just how I feel, and I'm just saying things, and I'm couching it in faux intellectualism, and you're trying to shut me down. You're just trying to shout me out, and you know, just because it's inconvenient for you to hear my white supremacist views. And she's saying the same fucking thing.
Literally.
Like, literally.
Actually, she's going a step further, because she now has put herself on this pedestal of her freedom.
Oh, sure.
Her freedom is being infringed upon. A few tweets she let off today. I will not allow others to decide what information I consume, how I learn, or what I think. That's just not negotiable for me.
I really...
I don't have to prove anything to you or anyone else. I refuse to have Black Lives Matter decide who I can follow, and I have been shamed for it.
Well, and then there was another tweet where she basically was like, you know, I've done all this work for 18 months and, you know, I'm this and that. And, you know, you're doing all this harm. It's like, girl, I who are you? What?
I'll take this shaming to keep that freedom. Judge me as you will, but please stop asking me to defend my freedom. Bitch, nobody gives a fuck who you follow. It's like you don't even understand the concept of you put out a theory. Okay, your theory was, I want to follow conservatives and engage with them to give me some insight into what's going on in the other side of the aisle and provide a more robust knowledge of the situation.
Check, I'm with
Check.
You.
Check, yep. Got it. You followed some avowed and pointed white supremacists and racists.
That at various intervals.
And retweeted them.
Yep.
Engaged with them.
Yep.
Said you liked them. Said you were friends with them. All the while, you can look through all the time you were doing all these things with them. Your followers, your Black followers, and people who followed you because they believed that you were in line with the principles of Black liberation and equality for all, saw these people's timelines and were like, whoa, that dude just called a Black person the N-word. That dude just tweeted a Black journalist and said the only reason why he's there is because of affirmative action. Oh my God, that dude's posting pictures of nooses on Black people's profiles. And they can't clap back at your fucking ass because that's fucking ridiculous. What you started out with was a theory. Nobody called you on shit about that theory, bitch. Not a single motherfucking person. You followed racists and Black people were like, hey, that's not cool. You then sicked all these racists that you have cultivated in your bullshit ass following to attack Black people. And when they called you on that shit, you lied and said you didn't have anything to do with it at all. Then you sicked these people off of the Black people, which didn't even work because I know even up through last night, somebody who didn't even use at your bullshit ass handle had the same thing happen to her, I might add.
No, a dear friend that had to fucking go private because the white supremacist trolling was so fucking vile.
And now, after all that, all the harm that you did to these Black people that trusted you and thought that you were somebody that they could count on, at least in the space that is created on Twitter, you have the fucking audacity, the nerve, the fucking gall to claim that someone is infringing on your freedom? Bitch, please. And I told you this yesterday, Drew. Leave it up to a fucking white woman to actually take the act of trolling and the act of these micro and macro aggressions against Black people to a whole new motherfucking level. And that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, we should be done. I'm going to be done. And I say there was a period of time when white people were coming onto Twitter after Mike Brown's death. Like, a lot of white people were coming to Twitter. And there was people that were finding my timeline and finding me, but then finding my message of, you listen, we're white people, we're indoctrinated into a cult of white supremacy, we're gonna be fucking saying fucked up shit and doing stupid things, and you know, we're oppressive by nature. It's like, you know, like, does that mean that you're a hooded Klansman wearing racist? No. Does that mean that you have racist tendencies and language and behaviors? Absolutely. Doesn't make you a horrible person. I'm the same way. I'm white, matriculated in fucking schools here in America. Mm-hmm. Like, that comes with the fucking, like, passport.
Right.
Page one supremacy, right?
Okay.
So individuals that were, like, shitty with that would really get fragile with the declaration that just because they're white, they're in some way, you know, guilty of something, right? This sort of, like, just because they're white. And, you know, the word racist was such a horrible tag to them. It was like, oh my God, you call me racist. But, like, you know, like, problematic, whatever. There was a couple of different meltdowns, and not one, but two, literally two different white people that were like, you know, oh, you know, I wanted this and all that. Like, what do you mean I'm, you know, inherently kind of racist? I'm not a racist, blah, blah, blah. What? You think I'm racist? I'll show you how racist I am. Oh, you think I'm a racist? N-word, 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 N-word. Fine. Are you happy? N-word. Like, literally, like, white dudes
have. What does this have to do with Amy?
This is what Amy's doing, like, on a macro scale. No, like, you want to see how fucked up? Like, literally, you want to see how bad I can be? I'm going to keep getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse.
I don't even, like, honestly, I'm done talking about it. But I will say, we do have a handy dandy primer for everyone who's listening to help them out. Here are 10 warnings that Martin Luther King Jr. gave black people about white people. Let's go through them.
I'm gonna listen.
Number one, white people never truly sought to end discrimination. Quote, with Selma and the Voting Rights Act, one phase of development in the Civil Rights Revolution came to an end. A new phase opened, but few observers realized it or were prepared for its implications. For the vast majority of white Americans, the past decade, the first phase had been a struggle to treat the Negro with a degree of decency, not of equality. White America was ready to demand that the Negro should be spared the lash of brutality and coarse degradation, but it had never been truly committed to helping him out of poverty, exploitation, or all other forms of discrimination. Number two, white people will abandon you. When Negroes looked for the second phase, the realization of equality, they found that many of their white allies had quietly disappeared. Number three, never take white people at their word.
I'm gonna go back to two, and I've said this before, and I'm not saying I'm like guilty of this, but the ability to be an activist and be, you know, one way as a white person, to be anti-racist one day, and in the next moment to not be anti-racist, it's so easy. That switch is so convenient. It's like falling into a fucking soft pair of pajamas. If you're not paying attention, it's just like you slip right back. I'm not saying you become supremacist-y, but you don't become aware and awoke to the oppression around you. You can just, it's just like the Matrix. You just slip right back into it.
Number three, never take white people at their word. MLK says, the Negroes of America had taken the president, the press, and the pulpit at their word when they spoke in broad terms of freedom and justice. But the absence of brutality and an unrenegade evil is not the presence of justice. To say murder is not the same thing as to ordain brotherhood. The word was broken, and the free-running expectations of the Negro crashed into the stone walls of white resistance. Number four, white people believe in a fantasy world, y'all. The majority of white Americans sincerely committed to justice for the Negro. They believe that American society is essentially hospitable to fair play and to steady growth toward an upper middle class utopia embodying racial harmony. But unfortunately, this is a fantasy of self-deception and comfortable vanity. Overwhelmingly, America's is still struggling with irresolution and contradictions.
Damn, this is was that number four?
What was four?
Fuck me, man.
Number five, white people are bonded to the status quo, y'all. As the nation passes from exposing extremist behavior to the deeper and more pervasive elements of equality, white America rearms its bonds to the status quo. It is contemplated comfortably hugging the shoreline now, fears that the winds of change are blowing it out to sea.
See, example, Donald fucking Trump's popularity.
Number six, white people want equality for blacks so long as it doesn't cost them anything. Practical cost of change for the nation up to this point have been cheap. The limited reforms have been obtained at bargain rates. There are no excuses and no taxes are required. Are there no expenses and no taxes are required for Negroes to share lunch counters, libraries, parks, hotels, and other facilities with whites? Number seven, white people don't even understand what equality means. But most whites in America in 1967, including many persons of goodwill, proceed from a premise that equality is a loose expression for improvement.
Yeah, I think a lot of white people now think equality is like we don't say the N-word in front of your face.
It's not that bad. It's not that bad, guys. Number eight.
There's a black president. Come on.
Number eight. White America really only seeks to hide inequality, not fix it. White America is not even psychologically organized to close the gap. Essentially, it seeks only to make it less painful and less obvious, but in most respects to retain it.
Didn't we just have this discussion last night?
We did just have it.
Literally, white America is deliberately not organized to fucking get shit done for Shinola.
Yeah. Number nine, white people don't believe they have anything to learn everyone.
Well, that's the myth. There's another one about...
Unless you're Amy, in which case racists apparently have everything to teach you.
The fantasy land, mm-hmm. I think, is a part of a lot of things. But that right there is the myth of, like, you know, what we know is what we know. And we're exceptional and we're brilliant and yeah. blah, 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 blah. It's our mm-hmm. fantasy land.
Whites, it must be frankly said, are not putting in a similar mass effort to re-educate themselves out of their racial ignorance. It is an aspect of their sense of superiority. The white people of America believe they have so little to learn.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, beyond an affect of the superiority, over the 4 decades since he wrote this, white America's the tools with which to be able to have an understanding of our racial identity are like obfuscated or hidden from us. Like they write textbooks that fucking call slavery like a trade thing. You yeah. know what I mean? Like yeah. it's I'm not saying that it's not an affect of that, but it's gotten worse, I think. The whitewashing of our
of all that. Oh yeah, yeah. definitely. Number 10, finally, whites believe blacks have come far enough. He remembers that with each modest advance, the white population promptly raises the argument that the Negro has come far enough. Each step forward accents an ever-present tendency to backlash. So all these quotes were from MLK's book, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community? You can buy it on Amazon.
I think that would be a really good flashcard for whenever a white person, like number 11, you can like handwrite in there like posthumously. White folk are going to use my whitewashed words posthumously to beat you over the head with. Mm-hmm. It's like a warning for black people. White people are going to take my image and fucking sanitize it and then use it as a cudgel against you.
Yeah.
That would be number 11. You should make that into a flashcard so that next time somebody like, you know, there's a whole series of GIFs of the referee, like the NFL referee, like blowing his whistle.
Oh, where he's like,
"Purr." Yeah. And then there's the writing. And there's one that's like, you've invoked MLK inappropriately as a white person. Penalty.
Penalty. Penalty. Penalty. Penalty. All right. Let's get it going.
Let's do it.
The news is coming on. The news is.
So our little town in Hamlet of Michigan, Flint, we know, has been, I'd say, ravaged for quite a while since the auto industry has left. I don't know how long ago, but Michael Moore did his whole Roger and Me was about Flint. But so now the city of Flint, in order to save money, diverted its water to get it from a different source, the Flint River. And it's full of lead. And they're poisoning everybody. And the incidence of unacceptable lead in 5-year-olds doubled in a span of just a couple of years. So, yeah. The unelected emergency manager switched the city's water source from the Detroit system to the long-polluted Flint River mm-hmm. to save money.
Save money. And the mayor declared a state of emergency.
The city's mayor made a stunning declaration on Monday.
I, Mayor Karen W. Weaver, declare state of emergency in the city of Flint, effective December 14, 2015.
The state of emergency was declared to address a man-made disaster, lead poisoning in the city's water supply. Last year, the city's unelected emergency manager switched the city's water source from the Detroit system to the long-polluted Flint River in an attempt to save money. Michigan has the most sweeping emergency management laws in the country, which allow the governor to appoint a single person to run financially troubled cities. From 2013 to 2014, 52% of Michigan's African-American residents lived under emergency management, compared to only 2% of white residents.
Wow, yo. And that's because of Detroit and places like Flint. And just think of what that just did. Half of black residents in the state of Michigan are living under conditions.
No, not the state of Michigan. Is that what she said?
You gotta go back. I thought she said the state of Michigan.
I thought she was talking about Flint itself.
No, I think it was the whole state.
Let's go back.
Completely doubled following the switch. The city's mayor made a stunning declaration on Monday.
I, Mayor Karen W. Weaver, declare state of emergency in the city of Flint, effective December 14, 2015.
The state of emergency was declared to address a man-made disaster, lead poisoning in the city's water supply. Last year, the city's unelected emergency manager switched the city's water source from the Detroit system to the long-polluted Flint River in an attempt to save money. Michigan has the most sweeping emergency management laws in the country, which allow the governor to appoint a single person to run financially troubled cities. From 2013 to 2014, 52% of Michigan's African-American residents lived under emergency management, compared to only 2% of white residents.
That's the entire fucking state. And so the other bit that's kind of like not avoided, but they say the unelected emergency manager, because it's financial crisis, and the state says, or the governor, I guess, Republican says, oh, I'm going to elect this person to be the manager of all of this because it's basically in like bankruptcy receivership.
Yeah.
And that individual made a decision that fucking poisoned kids.
Yep.
Literally, to save fucking money. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's one individual. It's not even a board. No one's even fucking looking at it. The whole thing is crazy.
It's nuts. 56, well, Flint itself is 56% African American. So that's like a big thing also.
That's how you get 52% of all Michigan black residents living under emergency management.
Not just that. I mean, we have still in this state, closer to Flint, but in Detroit, thousands of people are forced to live without water. Like 40% of people just do not have running water. Their water has been cut off because they're unable to pay the bills that have been soaring over the last decade, and they just stopped providing water for them. These people are literally like building outhouses on their properties and like don't have any water. They do not have water in this country in 2015.
That's mind-boggling. And you know, we've talked about Michigan and that it's home to, you know, some of the worst places to live for black people, and that the Midwest in general is you know, just seems to be racially you know, I don't say crisis after crisis, but you know, a lot of the higher profile incidents across the country have been kind of in the Midwest. And I think Michigan in general is just, I don't know what the state's gonna do. I really don't. It's it needs something.
Well, it just gets me because there's articles coming out like, oh, one of the top places to buy real estate is Grand Rapids. And it's like, yeah, but
for white people,
it's like the worst place ever for black people. I think the fifth worst place in the whole country for black people. I'll play a quick clip about the
assumptive for white people is always there.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yes, you're right.
Because if it was best for black people, they'd say black people. Right. If they just say people, they mean white people.
They mean white people. God damn
it. If you misplace your Discover, can use free.
Goddamn ads. I hate the ads.
Somebody's got to do like a podcast app that like zaps the 5 seconds.
Zaps the ads. Yeah, the ads are the worst. And it's never like good ads either, like funny ones or anything. Stupid.
I don't know. I did see that ad for that poop spray.
Yeah.
I was paying them $70 a month. Now, after about 8 months,
from Detroit,
those bills started coming that I showed you. The bills that said I owe nothing, and I had $22 credit. So I said, oh, okay, well, they told me that if I paid that off, that they would start taking care of the water bill. So naturally, I assumed they had started taking care of the water bill. Because the bills that I started getting here every month said the same thing, $22 credit, do not pay. And I said, oh, okay, well, they kept their word and everything. Then one day in May, I came home and there was a thing hanging on my door.
Now, when she says May, this is an interview from this week, she means May of 2013. She's a 66-year-old black woman that lives in Detroit. And she hasn't had running water in her crumbling domicile for 2 years.
And pre-2-4, $70 a month?
Yeah.
For fucking water? $70 a month?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the citywide totals say at least 4,000, probably more, in Detroit. And she happens to be one of the people who they had turned off like 40% of people's water in 2013 and in these massive shutoffs that kind of gained a lot of attention. And hers was never turned back on in addition to these other 4,000 plus people. And it's really dire situation that the people of this state, the white people of this state, don't give two shits about. So there's that. Speaking of Michigan, we'll move over to the legislative side of things to talk about our fair state. Michigan Senate GOP plans to pass straight ticket voting ban and ditch absentee voting bill. In Lansing, Michigan, Michigan will ban straight ticket voting without expanding absentee ballot options if the Senate Republicans have their way. This bill is moving up into the upper chamber. We'll move Wednesday to separate elections bills linked and approved last week by the House It would eliminate the option for voters to choose all candidates of a single political party by marking a checkbox on their ballot. And the proposal, which could help Republicans win down-ticket education seats they've struggled to secure in recent years, has faced pushback from local clerks who believe that eliminating the faster voting option will lead to longer lines on election day. Democrats have been blasting the bill, arguing that it could disenfranchise voters, especially in minorities in urban areas with already crowded precincts.
They're passing a bill so that you can't punch like 132 straight Democratic tickets.
Just to make it harder to vote.
To make it A, harder to vote, and B, more likely. Here's literally, if I'm reading this correctly, here's literally what's going to happen. More people are going to fucking not vote for the fucking like bottom tier education things.
Yeah.
Because it's not that it's a hassle, but if I got to
It's like, who do you know? Whatever. It's not like,
if I have to punch 17 holes or punch one, I don't know if I'm punching all 17.
Right.
I guarantee you they know
a
large percentage of people don't punch fucking number 16 and 17.
Yeah.
And they know when there's less turnout, fucking Republicans win.
Yeah.
It's another voter disenfranchisement, another fucking voter suppression tactic, and it's just so goddamn disgusting.
It's gross.
And where are Democrats? Where are fucking, you know, I quote unquote vote Democratic. I've been a Democratic Party member. I don't think of myself as Democratic all these times, but where the fuck are we? Just asleep at the wheel? Our fucking elected people can't fucking muster a fucking anything? It's weird. All these voter fucking, the ID laws, they're all just so disgusting and they're so obvious.
But I like to read it about here because I think people feel like, oh, it's Texas, it's Alabama, it's Mississippi.
No, it's Michigan, bro.
It's Michigan, bro. Like, for real.
And this might, I mean, this one's like, I'm not saying it looks different. Like, it's still the same impact and outcome.
Yeah.
And the kudos to the author of the article, like, saying for what it was, like, this is really going to help Republicans on the lower tier education voting. But it's absolutely a voter disenfranchisement.
Yeah.
And if it makes longer lines and people don't get in, for shit's sake, man.
I know. It's
anything that has, so it's like, you know, they gerrymandered the districts to death so that fucking these incumbents can't ever fucking get voted out. And now they're making all these other elections that aren't gerrymandered, you know, districts and statewide things that aren't gerrymandered. They're fucking impacting the turnout with voter disenfranchisement and voter suppression and voter ID laws and all this fucking shit. And they gutted. They fucking took out key provisos from the Voter Rights Act. Like, we're talking about fucking justice and equality, and you read fucking 10 things, you know, 10 warnings that MLK, I certainly don't think he expected the fucking, you know, part of his greatest legacy to be fucking gutted. To be like, you know, these states that are the historic worst offenders and beat black people up at the polls, you can change anything on your voting process now, and you don't need oversight from a governing body. That's what they changed. That's what they took away. So they literally can make these laws, and there's no oversight to saying like, hey, you know what? That's kind of fucked up. A proviso of the Civil Rights Act, the voting part, was that X number of states, you know, Alabama, Texas, all these fucking southern places that used to beat fucking black people up at the polls, make these fucking poll taxes and poll tests, and you had to answer all these questions. All those fucking kind of things got A, outlawed, and then B, to prevent them from happening again, you had to fucking have a group, a party, you know, elected people had to review these changes. Mm-hmm. And they fucking took that away, and as soon as they took that away, all these fucking, and Michigan, I'm not saying that they were a part of those states because they weren't, but you know, when every other state's now fucking making these laws, why not Michigan too? Mm. Why not Michigan too? Mm-hmm. You know, there's not the SCOTUS said it wasn't a big deal, so fuck it.
Right.
Fuck it.
Fuck it.
What's that? And I forget the name of it. The window of dialogue that's acceptable. What's that called?
I don't know.
You know, I'll look it up.
Okay. Should I go on to the next story? Okay. So I'll play this for the next story too.
The Confederacy, you see, was on the wrong side of history and humanity. It supported and promoted a truly horrifying, twisted system built on the premise.
So this is Mayor Mitch Landrieu of New Orleans speaking to the city council to remove four Confederate statues in the city of New Orleans.
That states had the right to treat human beings as slaves. No one who knows history can deny this. No one. Individual Confederate soldiers, no doubt fighting bravely for the cause that they believed in, nevertheless fought against the United States of America for a cause that was wrong. General Lee led that fight. Jefferson Davis presided over it. P.T. Beauregard participated in it. And I don't think we have much debate about the Liberty Monument. These monuments are just an effort to rewrite that history, to literally put, quote-unquote, the lost cause of the Confederacy on a pedestal and cast an oppressive shadow of exclusion over our city.
Following the Civil War, Beauregard advocated for increased civil rights and suffrage for the recently freed slaves.
So this is the old white dude.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the counter.
Saying why they should stay.
These post-war actions and statements speak louder than those here today who support the removal of their monuments.
Public monuments should represent public pride. And many of you who drove in or flew in to join the locals in contesting this motion, you who say we should focus on the crime-ridden streets of New Orleans, but no, we will not protect monuments built to honor some of the biggest criminals in U.S. history. Let's consider the source. Andrew Jackson himself said, take time to deliberate. But when the time for action arises, stop thinking and go in. Go in for the youth of this city who deserve to see an honorable, organic, living history. One that is not fixed in stone. One that changes. One that evolves.
When I was a boy, they had signs that said, white only. And many of the people that look at me in this moment will not be in their seats if that sign did not come down and change the vocabulary. They want us to surrender to this evilness. Every jail that I've been in.
That's your time, sir.
Get the hell out of my time.
He's speaking for the hell.
So anyway, so they did
that. That black woman had the fire.
Yeah. So the vote did go through 6-1 to remove the 4 Confederate monuments. Besides the General Robert E. Lee, statues of General P.G.T. Beauregard at the entrance of City Park and Confederate President Jefferson Davis in Mid-City and the obelisk dedicated to the Battle of Liberty Place at the foot of Iberville Street will all come down.
I know that area intimately. It's yes, Lee Circle.
It is. So Lee Circle, the proposal would be for it to change back to its original name, which was Tivoli Circle.
Okay. And what are they going to do about all the Robert E. Lee grocery store chain?
I don't know if they can do anything about that.
I know the city council can't, but like, I'm not trying to like shade it. Like, I think things can change and should change. And I don't want it to be hey, let's focus on this while like we fucking focus, you know, we don't bother with other stuff. And I think that phrase I was looking for, Overton window, which is the like window of discourse politically, like what's acceptable.
Okay.
It's shifting on different topics in different directions. So like the Overton window on, hey, let's take these statues down has moved pretty significantly, recently. Yeah. Right. You know, like the Southern Confederate flag debate, like 2 years ago was like, you know, like, what are you talking about? And now I was like, hey, it's done. Let's take it down. But the Overton window on the other side on, you know, getting these laws passed that disenfranchise voting, that suppress voting,
right?
Like that's gotten very, very acceptable. Mm. And people, I don't say they don't talk about it, but like for whatever reason, like you don't see jokes about it on TV.
Took the lessons from the abortion fight. And they've really taken them and applied them to many other areas, including voting rights, which is like, okay, we're not going to be able to like blatantly be like,
blacks can't vote.
Black people. But let's just look at exactly how this works. Let's, number one, let's make them have
death
to
by
show
a million paper
let's
cuts.
Make them show their ID, even though it's hard to get ID. And maybe they come from a place that it's not easy to get two forms of ID together to get an ID. And let's close all of the DMV's locations they have to go to get
they
said
do so
ID
many worse
tubes.
They do shit like if you're a college student, you can't vote in the district and the precinct that you're at. Like you can't vote in that election,
right?
Even though you're there and you're impacted by that area, you're governed by that area, you can't vote in its things. And then they make it real hard for you to fucking like vote absentee in a way. And of course, why? Because college campuses are full of liberal kids and they vote Democrat, and you know, they do all kinds mm-hmm. of shit. It's really insane. But you obviously know about Mumia in jail, and I think we've talked a little bit about his struggles here on the John. But he goes all the way back to the Philadelphia Move movement and the firebombing in Philadelphia and killing of, I think, 13 individuals and burning down 60 homes. And they're still burnt out. There's still an entire row home section in South Philly that's just totally burned out. But so Mumia has been suffering.
And full disclosure, like we're pretty close to like Ramona,
absolutely
Africa and Pam and
members of the Avenue
members
movement.
Of the Africa, yeah. So just doing the work that we did do while we were on the ground.
Yeah, and I have the most utmost respect for Ramona and everyone. She's an incredible rock. But so. Mumia's been in jail, obviously, for many, many years, and he's been deteriorating his health. And so this is a letter from his brother, Keith Cook. And I think it's maybe more important to read his words. So I'll just read it. Please provide immediate life-saving hepatitis C treatment to Mumia Abdul-Jamal. My name is Keith Cook, and I am Mumia Abdul-Jamal's brother. My loss and my pain have been constant for 3 decades since my brother has been in prison. He needs to come home like so many of the men from our community. Mumia is very ill. I was in the waiting room of the intensive care unit just feet from where he lay, nearly dying, for 28 long hours in Pottsville before the guards would let me see him. He was chained, his right arm and leg shackled to the hospital bed. Did you know that there is absolutely no reason for him to suffer? There is a cure for hepatitis C, just one pill a day. I see my brother, but the Department of Corrections and the courts see a prisoner. Wasn't Jesus a prisoner? Wasn't Nelson Mandela a prisoner? Dr. Paul Noel, Director of Health Care for Pennsylvania Department of Corrections, and Dr. Carl J. Keldy, Chief Clinical Officer of Corrective Care Solutions, would let incarcerated people die from this disease. Yes, Mumia is supported by Amnesty International and Desmond Tutu, among many others. He's also just like any other black man in prison. Together, we must stop this shameful practice of denying life-saving health care to Mumia Abdul-Jamal and all prisoners, and we must expose the public health imperative of treating hepatitis C inside and outside of prisons. As the drug's inventor, Michael Sevilla, notes, how can you deny people access to a cure? Right now, my brother is in infirmary at SCI Mahani, and he is receiving absolutely no treatment. We're in court now with a petition. You can make sure that the U.S. District Court Judge Marini and Magistrate Malachek see and hear more than word prisoner. We know these folks are our mothers, fathers, and brothers. We know they deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. We need your voice to be heard. Tell them you know that international medical neglect is a violation of the 8th Amendment and a Hippocratic Oath. Medical apartheid must stop. Please join me. And there's a petition that I've signed, and we'll certainly share on the John. And it's insane. They're, you know, they're very content with letting him die, and they called it, you know, medical apartheid, and it's awful. It really is. And I know someone personally that is cured from hepatitis and went through the like experimental phases before it was this one pill a day stuff. And there was a point where he was on death's door. I really was like, that's the last time we're going to see this individual. And he now looks better than I've ever thought. So, you know, the fact that they're withholding it is very sad.
It is sad.
And it, you know,
I know that. And I talked with Gabe not too long ago, and they actually headed out yesterday to Pittsburgh to deliver petitions that have been signed. I think they had like 200,000 or something people that have signed it, but please continue to sign the petition and you know, hopefully lift this story up so that more people can raise their voices collectively to lead to fair treatment of our prisoners in this country. It's such a sore point for me and such an entry point for me in terms of my belief that Black Lives Matter extends far beyond just extrajudicial killings of Black people and brown people on our streets, but really extends to this notion that anything that one can do makes you less than human. And you know, the 13th Amendment is written so that this is allowed, so that our prisoners are no longer seen as human beings. And I don't even like to use the phrase like, imagine if it was your brother, imagine if it was your whatever, you know, because I think that that is not something people are able to do, especially white people. I say this all the time. Someone said to me like, oh, you know, white people will start taking gun control seriously when, you know, or take police violence seriously when it's, you know, a pretty blonde girl that gets assaulted or killed by a police officer. And I said, honestly, first of all, that's happened. And secondly, no, they won't, because white people are inherently imbued with the idea that they are exceptional. And so any situation they see, it can never happen to them.
Well, and there's even a, you know, there's a lot going on to get to that point, but they've literally shown that because there's a, you know, white people don't think of ourselves as part of a larger group of white as a race. We don't think of our, that's just not, no information is delivered to us in that way. Yet we're thinking all black people are a monolith. Mm-hmm. And then coupled with like, they have shown like images of people's brain scans and like needles going into the arm of a white person and a needle going into the arm of a black person. And the like emotional, like evocative, like stimulus for black skin versus white skin is different. Like white people literally, like, I'm not trying to like make light or joke of it, but like there's absolutely an empathy gap. Like it exists. It's evidenced. It's science.
It's evidence. It's science. It leads to black people not getting pain meds at the same rate as white people when they're in pain, and lots of other ways that it shows itself. So
and
for sure.
And I'll just summate resonate, I think, what you're thinking and saying, or don't put words in your mouth, but, you know, the movement is for all black lives. And that includes incarcerated citizens. And I, you know, I think
beyond, like, even that is understating it. It's not just including them. It's them that we fight for. We fight for those that have no voice. We fight for those no one listens to. We fight for those that have it the worst. And no one in this country has it worse than the prisoners that are locked up behind bars.
Amen.
In this country. And that's the difference.
And I think we need to do another point, or an FRN episode or something about, because I use the word incarcerated citizens, but really we deny individuals coming from prison all the rights of citizenry. Mm-hmm. You know, like, citizen is still correct, but Jesus, we strip them a lot of what most citizens consider their
inalienable rights.
I
actually don't
rights.
Even like using the word citizen anymore. I don't use it, period. Because we have plenty of undocumented people that are locked up behind bars. Some are on a hunger strike right now in California. You know,
no, fair enough.
I don't even believe in it as a indicator of worth.
Well, and
that's why people use it.
There was someone that was saying talk about the civil rights that, you know, I was talking about, that black people don't have them. And someone was like, well, yes, we do. I'm like, well, but if they're not enforced, right, if people can kill us with impunity, do we really have those rights? Like, you know, if I write on a piece of, and I forget who the tweeter said it, but it was a perfect analogy. They said, if I write, I owe you $500 on a piece of paper, and I give you the piece of paper, and then you say, hey, you owe me $500, and I say, fuck you, and I punch you in the face, how much is the piece of paper worth? Are you going to go around saying, I've got this piece of paper that's worth $500?
Right.
You know, like, no. Are you going to be able to trade that to somebody for $400? No, probably not. That's the level of rights that, you know, black individuals. In our country.
You can say people.
Black people. I say citizens.
You can say folks.
Folks.
Yeah. I like the word folks just because it's cool.
All right. Is it all bad news? Is there some better news?
Yeah, we have a few updates, actually.
Okay.
The first is, last week we talked about Queen Serena winning the Sports Person of the Year.
Yes.
As Sports Illustrated. So there's a video of her doing her acceptance speech at the award ceremony. So let's give a listen to what she had to say. What's going on here?
And I cannot help but think of my favorite poet, Maya Angelou, and she has this poem called And Still I Rise. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me with the very dirt, but still, like dust, I rise. Just like moon and suns with the certainty of tides, just like hopes and springing high, still I rise. Did you want to see me broken, bowed head and lowered eyes, shoulders falling like teardrops weakened by my soulful cries? Out of the huts of history's shame, I rise. From a past that's rooted in pain, I rise. I'm a black ocean leaping wide, welling and swelling I bear in the tide. Leaving behind nights of terror and fear, I rise. Into the daybreak that's wonderfully clear, I rise. Bringing the gifts that my ancestors gave, I rise. I am the dream and the hope of a slave, I rise. I rise. I rise. Thank you, Sports Illustrated.
Nice. That's all she did. That was one of my favorite songs someone asked us the other day about Ben Harper.
Right.
And his debut album had a version of I'll Rise that was awesome. But yeah, Serena, good for her.
Queen Serena. I literally, like, the first time I watched it, I was like teary-eyed because she's teary-eyed. And I'm like, oh, don't cry, because if she cries, and I'm going to start crying. It's like both going to be crying.
Twisted lies. You may trod me down in the very dirt, and still like the dust I'll rise. Does my happiness upset you? Why all rest with you alone? Cause I laugh like I've got an oil well pumping in my living room. So you may shoot me with your words. You may
I won't let that play the whole time, but it's a beautiful song by Ben Harper.
We'll put the link in the show notes.
I will. Was that the hand signal you were giving there?
Yes, that was. Otherwise, I'll
if we ever had the, what did I say? We got to get the
link in the show. No, the
Spreecast. The reason we're going to Spreecast is so people can see your fucking your side eye, your faces, that you're like you're over the cat. Like I'm like, what? What are you trying to do? What are you doing? Oh, the link. Oh,
link,
yeah.
Ben Harper. That's not where it goes, but it's okay.
No, that's not where it goes. But it's in the show notes. I'll move it.
You
can only ask me to do so much.
Anyways.
Good on Street Up.
So we had another update.
Yeah, this one, I guess, back to bad news. So we all remember the assault on Spring Valley. At Spring Valley, forgive me. And nearly 2 months after that has encountered Ben Fields, let's remember his name, threw a student across the room for refusing to leave. And I shouldn't even like say refusing, for sitting there.
Yeah.
Okay. They're both facing charges. So the 6-year-old victim known as Shakara. 16-year-old. Known as Shakara. And that might be a pseudonym because she's
a
minor.
Yeah, she's a minor. Mm-hmm.
And 18-year-old classmate Nia Kenny, who filmed it. Okay. So like literally the girl that filmed it, right? They're facing charges and penalties and fines. And it's just, I don't say that like disgusts me, but it's like, you know, when you really, again, like the person asked earlier about like, how do you not feel guilty? And like one of the things is like, you see it everywhere. Like you see the, like, I think white people see this and I don't think they think of this as like being so disgusting and gross, but because it's such a reaction to a viral video showing violence and it's deliberately in its intent to say, don't film violence. Don't talk about violence. How dare you do this? Like you better act a certain way. It's just, it's horrible. Like the Missouri legislator that passed a law as soon as the Missouri students,
but they didn't pass it. It's already been,
it's been banned.
His co-author, like,
but the fact that he fucking penned it, right?
Absolutely.
Like the football players decide we're going to sit out a game to get the Missouri Concerned Student 1950 initiative some attention, and it worked. The president resigned, so maybe hopefully things are changing. And not even a fucking month later, a legislator is like, well, if any football player refuses to play for any reason other than an injury, they'll lose their scholarship.
So just to be clear, these two young ladies were arrested at the scene despite one of them being assaulted to the point that she required medical attention.
Yep.
They are both being charged with disturbing schools, a misdemeanor that can result in 90 days in jail or $1,000 fine.
That's
Shakara was also charged with assault on an officer while resisting arrest. So that video you watched of Officer Ben Fields throwing a 16-year-old girl out of her chair and across a room has resulted in the girl being charged with assault on an officer while resisting arrest.
Assault on an officer.
Local police are not investigating at all. However, the FBI is, which means nothing is going to be done.
You know, I was talking about the other day that's sort of the modus operandi of police with protesters now is to grab you and move you around in a rough way. And then like all of a sudden, like your elbow touches them, like assault, click, clack, clack. You know what I'm saying? Like the trump up ridiculous charges. Like you grab my arm and fling my body around and like I brushed up against you and now I'm getting charged with assault. Mm-hmm. Fuck out of here.
So we actually had a social justice social media storm on Thursday at 3 p.m. Hashtag drop the charges. You can see we were having people sign the petition and also calling the legislator's office. Johnson, however, made it clear the movement would have no impact on how he would proceed with the charges. He released a statement that said in part, until we receive the FBI's findings at the conclusion of their investigation, the incident involving Ben Fields is not a pending case within the Richland County Solicitor's Office.
I mean, we're not going to do anything until they tell us we don't have to do anything.
Every case within this circuit is prosecuted on the basis of evidence. I do not simply decide cases based on feelings, public opinion, or sentiment, nor do I decide them based on political pressure. And I believe that is what all citizens expect from their solicitor. While I'm encouraged that the public is engaged and interested in this process, I feel compelled to remind the community that the public sentiment petitions, chain letters, and calling campaigns are effective tools for impacting legislation and changing the law. However, the solicitor's office is not where law is made. Our duty is to prosecute cases or to decline the prosecution of cases based only on evidence and in accordance with the law, not based upon majority opinion nor public outcry. The cases involving the juvenile student and Nia Kenny, as with all other cases pending in the Fifth Circuit, shall be decided fairly upon and based upon the legal evidence in each case and in accordance with the laws of this state.
And they say that, which is complete bullshit, because you know it won't be fair. And they've already – the whole shit's biased already. That you charge her with fucking assault is insane.
It's crazy.
Just fucking insane, dude.
So absolutely insane. The third update is, I don't know if people remember, but here in Grand Rapids, actually, at Calvin College, there was a incident on November 22nd where members of the community wrote white power and drew swastikas in the snow on cars after we had a snowstorm.
In a big parking lot.
And so an op-ed was written by one of the social work professors to address the incident. It was published on the 13th of December in the Calvin College newspaper, putting racism, white supremacy, and white privilege in context. And he mentions the incident. He says, in the remarks of the incident, President LaRoy rightfully identified the statement, white power and the swastika with white supremacy and the ideology that shaped Nazi Germany, apartheid, South Africa, chattel slavery in the U.S. and the Jim Crow South. He focused on two scriptures, the story of, by the way, it's a Catholic university. Okay. The story of Jesus and the woman caught in the adultery, and Jesus warning that before we remove the splinter in the eye of the other, we ought to attend to the plank in our own. He did this largely in the context of not demonizing those who committed these acts, and that is an appropriate concern. Christians should never reduce anyone to the worst thing they have done. None of us stands innocent before the Lord. However, we should never mention Nazi Germany, apartheid South Africa, or the Jim Crow South without identifying the connections to us here at Calvin College and the brutality right here in Grand Rapids. Nazi Germany took the eugenics movement, championed by academics and social workers in the United States in the early decades of the 20th century, to its logical conclusion. Many of the architects of apartheid South Africa were Dutch and Reformed. In fact, many of them used Calvinist theology to justify their system. White supremacy created slavery and Jim Crow, but when it was combined with its Calvinist cousin, Manifest Destiny, see the work of the late Richard Twiss or Mark Charles, it also created Michigan. The land on which Calvin College sits was stolen from what our own Declaration of Independence termed the merciless Indian savages by the Treaty of Chicago in 1821. The Ottawa and Potawatomi were given a few thousand dollars in yearly payments and access to a blacksmith and a teacher on the north side of the Grand River in exchange for everything south of it all the way to Chicago. When we imagine white supremacy primarily as something out there that's incomparable with us in here, we ignore the plank in our own eye.
The professor had, I think, one of the best statements I've seen. And again, he did a really good job in not necessarily like calling out, but calling everyone else in and saying, hey, look, this is us. But he said, while few members of this community openly espouse white supremacy, so like he's right there admitting there are a few members of their church community that openly espouse white supremacy. While few members of the community open, maybe not a lot, but few. While few members of this community openly espouse white supremacy, many members of our community continue to deny white privilege. It must be clearly stated that those who deny white privilege functionally believe in white supremacy, whether they have the courage to write it on a car or not. And to me, that was like, as soon as I read that, I was like, okay, he's going to take this seriously. Because I thought it, you know, it's not a, we're not a huge town and it didn't really get national press, but it kind of got on the news here and like, you know, NBC 10 and this and that. But then there really wasn't much else about it. It's like, okay, this happened and right. Whatever.
Which is
like,
common here.
Absolutely.
It's like the land of denial.
It's the modus operandi. Okay. Like, oh my God, that happened. So what are we making for dinner? but yeah, you know, literally admitting that there are, you know, aren't many, but maybe a few that openly espouse it. Obviously they wrote on the fucking car. But there's many members that deny white privilege and that functionally is believing in white supremacy.
Yeah.
And that's my new, I don't say mantra, but like, you know, that's kind of, I've been finding, struggling a way to put that into words, but I think it's very succinct that denying white privilege is functionally agreeing with and believing in white supremacy.
Yeah. He says at the end, I love how he brings it back to the scripture that the president used in his address about the situation. He says, as a white person, you can choose to believe the game is fair. You can choose to believe that you have no privilege. You can see what happened on November 22nd as a splinter in the eye of two misguided students. But if you do, you ignore the plank. If the game is fair, you are assuming that white people are simply better at it. You are assuming that white racism is ugly. That while racism is ugly, it has no real power. It doesn't hold anyone back. You are assuming white supremacy. So.
Yeah, beautiful. And I haven't in a long, long time, but I used to argue with Twitter trolls and other people. It would get to that point like, okay, well, here you are. Here's the difference. We know these, you know, racial disparities exist. You agree. I agree. They're not made up. Okay, why do they exist? And, you know, often it comes down to they believe in some form of white supremacy in any of those shapes that this author just mentioned.
Absolutely.
That's a great article. I'm glad we got in there.
Yeah, it's good. All right, so...
I think we've got an apology.
Oh, yeah, I think we do.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see how it goes.
We've been like 0 for 4.
0 for 4 so far, but we'll see.
Maybe. So who's our contestant this week?
This week we have the Chipotle CEO offers a fat newspaper ad apology. An expansive apology from the founder, co-CEO, and chairman of Chipotle Mexican Grill, published in the likes of the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and the USA Today, comes after a rash of E. coli, salmonella, and norovirus inside incidents at Chipotle restaurants across the country.
Does it have the full details? Like, they closed 30 stores. Like, they killed, I think, at least one or two people. They gave a lot of diarrhea.
Well, let's see what his apology says.
Okay.
He says, a letter from Chipotle founder Steve Ells. As a chef, nothing is more important to me than serving my guests food that is safe, delicious, and wholesome. Now, I'm going to stop right here because I cook a lot. I never really think about safety because I practice safe. Yeah,
either it is or it isn't. Like, there's like, not like, you're not like in the middle,
that's
like,
what, that's
wait
important
a minute.
To you, safety?
Shit, did I wash my hands?
All right, well, whatever.
Wait a minute. Mm-hmm.
From the beginning, all of our food safety programs have met or exceeded industry standards, but recent incidents and a E. coli outbreak that sickened 52 people and a norovirus outbreak that sickened approximately 140 people at a single Chipotle restaurant in Boston have shown us that we need to do better, much better. The fact that anyone has become ill eating at Chipotle is completely unacceptable to me, and I'm deeply sorry. As a result, we are committed to becoming known as a leader in food safety, just as we are known for using the very best ingredients in a fast food setting. I want to share with our customers specifics on some of the significant steps we are taking to ensure all the food we serve is as safe as it can be. He goes through a bunch of bullshit about what they're doing. They're going to be incorporating the preeminent food safety expert to design a comprehensive food safety program throughout their supply chain. They're implementing high resolution sampling and testing of all their ingredients to prevent contaminants come out. It's unprecedented in the restaurant industry, and they're also going to design many improvements within the restaurants to ensure food safety is a high priority on the individual location level. This includes introduction of additional biological kill steps to eliminate microbial risk and rolling out new sanitation procedures for restaurants. Okay, he finishes.
Wow. I'm just – just to put in clarity, since September 18th of this year
– yeah.
I'll go to the little higher. August 7th of mm-hmm. this year,
yeah.
Their stock was at $7.49.
And now?
It's now down to $5.40. That's literally like 200 points. That's a lot. That's like lot. 20%. Yeah, that's a lot.
In the end, it may not be possible for anyone to completely eliminate all risk with regard to food or from any environment where people congregate. Don't stop me in the middle. Let me finish and we'll decide to dissect it in a minute. But we are confident that we can achieve near zero risk. Chipotle is an incredibly focused company. Our menu has remained virtually unchanged for the last 22 years, and we only have 64 ingredients in our food. That you fucked up.
But one of them fucking made people really ill.
Rest assured that we have looked at each of these ingredients, where they come from, and how they can be made even safer. I believe our restaurants are safer today than they ever have been. The last 22 years have been an incredible journey, and we are not going to shy away from this new challenge. I'd like to take this opportunity to apologize on behalf of all of us at Chipotle and to thank our loyal customers who have stood by us through this difficult time. Steve Ellis, founder, chairman, and CEO of Chipotle.
Well, you know what? See, he saved it at the end, because I was going to say, like, not we needed, like, the bingo card, but, like, he was doing a lot of, like, you know, nobody's perfect. Other restaurants, you know, no one gets flawed. I mean, everyone gives a little bit of E. coli, right? Even McDonald's has, like, 2 E. coli cases.
Well,
nobody's
flawless. We score on a scale of 1 to 10, and so what do you give this?
Well, and like I said, so he was doing this, like, weird dance, but that last line, he said, I would like to apologize. Mm-hmm. Although he didn't say, like, for what, you know, like, I'd like to apologize. A stronger would have been like, apologize to the 182 people we personally made sick. I'm very sorry.
Right.
He probably can't for litigation purposes. He probably needs to apologize to some stockholders and other people. But I think that, I'm going to give him a little bit extra credit, because you don't see CEOs and businesses. I think it was like you had to. Like the negative press was sufficient enough that like,
well,
if you didn't.
Well, they've got a lot of, they have another lawsuit going on that's because they've been proudly declaring that they use non-GMO food and allegedly that's a lie. So there's that too. He didn't apologize in this one. What do you give
me? What's our scale? 1 to what?
1 to 10.
1 to 10. I'd say, you know, like I think it's maybe like a 6. Because read the last line again.
The last line was, that wasn't the last
line. I want to apologize. The one that starts with, I'd like to apologize, or I apologize. How's it go?
I'd like to take this opportunity to apologize on behalf of all of us at Chipotle and to thank our loyal customers who have served us through this difficult time. And he started out, yeah, that's what he said.
I'm going to say 5 because not that I hate that phrasing, but even that it's not like, I apologize. That's very a simple sentence.
Right.
Like, I am
the buck
sorry.
Stops with me.
I'm sorry. Like that's your 10. Like that's the benchmark. And he's like, well, I'd like to take this opportunity, you know, right now, this one time, in an ad that I bought to try and save face on PR.
Right.
I'd like to take the opportunity to apologize.
I'm giving it a 4.
I say 5.
I know. I'm saying I'm giving it a 4. You already said 5. I'm giving it a 4 because he didn't say specifically what he was apologizing for. Like, he should have told us exactly how this contaminant occurred. Because I don't know that any of these solutions that he's proposed will address the issues that.
And I thought it was a supplier of beef somewhere down the line. Like,
I don't know
even
what it is. I don't know what it is, and this fucking apology didn't tell me. So,
and like, don't you like, what's the, remember the show Eastbound and Down,
uh-huh,
when Stevie's taking a shit in prison? And he's like, quit looking at me, shit. This wouldn't be happening if you'd grill your meat or cook it or something.
Right.
Like, that's exactly Chipotle. Like I don't say like grilling your meat should get rid of E. coli, but maybe I don't know enough about it.
No, it doesn't get rid of E. coli.
But Novavirus, like, that's somebody not washing their fucking hands.
I don't know what all that's about. But my point is that this apology didn't tell me any of those things. So that's the story I have to say about that. So he gets a 5 from you and a 4 from me. Better than we've done recently. So
yeah, better than the DQ and the 0.
The DQ we've been dealing with.
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
This one, frame this one under fragile, I guess. So the new, relatively new Sam's Club CEO, a black woman, and one of the first at a company this size, are outraged. White people are outraged. White men are outraged over comments that they deemed were racist. Because she spoke out diversity. I'll just give you her exact sentence. She's talking about diversity with Yahoo Finance Reports, and she says it has to start with top leadership, okay, regarding the way she promotes diversity. My executive team is very diverse, and I make that a priority. I demand it within my team. But then she says, just today, we met with a supplier and the entire other side of the table was all Caucasian males. That was interesting. I decided not to talk about it directly with them, folks in the room, because there weren't any females or any women levels down. So I'm going to place a call to him. Okay. So that's all she said. But that comment there on Twitter was like, oh, she's a racist against white men. I'm never going to shop at Sam's Club again.
Everybody said, what about this war on white men, Drew? Y'all are under attack. Because this black woman dared to be like, I'm doing business with you, and you have no women, no black people, no Hispanic people, no nothing, just white men sitting across from me at this table. Come on. In this day and age, it's ridiculous.
So someone, they quote a couple of different people in their story, and one of them is the cuck stops here.
Oh,
like
God.
Root.com.
Aren't they friends with Amy Stevens?
Cuck stops here? I don't know. I'm sure they want to talk with her.
They want to meet with her. Yeah, but they're so delusional. See how Sam's Club CEO discriminates against white males? Time to say goodbye. That bitch is going to be buying her bulk toilet paper there next week.
The thing that really, like, I would say it irks me is that, like, so many white people use this as an example of actual racism, right? Like, yeah. Racism's alive and well. A CEO demanded diversity other than a table full of white men. And the other, like if you want to get really serious with it, what do you think that means? Like, okay, so, like, let's just anecdotally talk about it. There was 15, 16, 20 people in this vendor's office? I don't know, but what number do you decide? Whatever it is, okay, you've got 100%. You've got 100%. And you're mad that at some point someone's demanding that you have less than 100% white men? Really? That you're pissed about losing 100% of this? Fuck out of here. That's so crazy. White people. Nutty!
Mm-hmm. So,
we're going to talk about your girl, Tina Fey.
She's not my girl, but we'll talk about her. So, Tina Fey, you know, she's got that comedy coming out, Sisters, with Amy Poehler. And she took the time to, they're doing press for it. And I don't know if you know, but did you watch the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which was her show? I don't think it is on Netflix. No. Anyways, Jane Krakowski plays a Native American woman who's hiding her true ethnicity on the show.
Okay.
Yes, I did say Jane Krakowski.
So a white woman's
blonde, playing, Polish Jane Krakowski plays that. And there was obviously some backlash and people were kind of like, this is kind of fucked up. Like, why would you write this? And Tina says, steer clear of the internet and you'll live forever. We did an Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt episode and the internet was in a whirlwind calling it racist. But my new goal is not to explain jokes. I feel like we put so much effort into writing and crafting everything. They need to speak for themselves. There's a real culture of demanding apologies and I'm opting out of that.
Oh, really? So that's a good follow-up to the This Week in Apologies. Like, that's like the... I don't know what the antithesis of an apology is, like a declarative, I'm never going to apologize for that. That's what this is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And convenient after you got checked and called out.
She's opting out, you guys. Now, I only bring this up in the context of the fact that some may recall in 2011 when Tracy Morgan made some quote-unquote anti-gay, actually they were anti-gay comments in his comedy routine, that Tina Fey took the time to come out and apologize for him. She said, and I quote, stand-up comics may have the right to work out the material in its ugliest and rawest form in front of an audience, but the violent imagery of Tracy's rant was disturbing to me at a time when homophobic hate crimes continue to be a life-threatening issue for the LGBT community. I speak for NBC and myself personally when I say I do not condone any violence or of any kind, and I'm pleased to see Tracy Morgan apologizing for his recent homophobic remarks and his stand-up appearance. It doesn't line up with the Tracy Morgan I know, who is not a hateful man and is generally much too sleepy and self-centered to ever hurt another person. I hope for his sake that Tracy's apology will be accepted as sincere by his gay and lesbian co-workers, 30 Rock, without whom Tracy would not have lines to say, clothes to wear, sets to stand on, scenes to partner, partners to act with, or a printed out paycheck from accounting to put in his pocket.
I see. Mm-hmm. So, LGBT community, I'm on NBC, big, long apology letter, probably got published in like, you know, was it Variety, whatever their trade publications are.
You, in a year that you put, cast a blonde Polish actress as a Native American, person hiding their identity, and your girlfriend slash sister Amy Poehler took the time to write not once but two jokes into her recent show bashing a child, Blue Ivy, black child, Blue
That's
Ivy.
Ridiculous. Super.
Now
racist.
you opting out.
I'm out.
Good to know, bitch.
So
good to know.
I said about the reaction of the Sam's Club CEO, just like, you know, fragility 101. Tina Fey, likewise, white fragility 101. And I'll post this because I think it should be read by everybody. It's a powerful dissertation thesis by Robin DiAngelo about this, I guess, I don't know, term white fragility and what she thinks it means and how it's applied. I'll just read one little paragraph. White fragility is a state in which even a minimum amount of racial stress becomes intolerable, triggering a range of defensive moves. These moves include the outward display of emotions such as anger, fear, and guilt, and behaviors such as argumentation, silence, and leaving the stress-inducing situation. These behaviors in turn function to reinstate white racial equilibrium. Racial stress results from an interruption to what is racially familiar. These interruptions can take a variety of forms and come from a range of sources. So for Tina Fey, she did exactly that. She's leaving the stress-inducing space because her normal white, and the trigger for her was that people were checking her. People of color were like, listen, we're not going to protect your feelings over some fucking fucked up shit you did.
Nope.
You know what I mean? Like, you did wrong, you know, burp, fuck, you fucked up. And so for her, she's going to leave the space.
She's out.
And same thing with the Sam's Club people. Like, you've got 100% of the fucking white male dudes on the other side of the table. And this one person's daring, you know, the temerity to suggest that there should be a little bit more diversity. And for them, they've responded with anger and outrage, you know, calling this racist. It's crazy.
It's nuts.
And I say everyone should read it because I don't mean black people should, but I think on some level it could be valuable to a black person that has to deal with white people about having to know what white people do, how white privilege you know, manifest itself in white people, because it's like a very predictable set of behaviors. And I see it in myself. Like, I read the whole white fragility thing. I'm like, oh my fucking God, that's me. I've done that. Oh my God, I did that. I own that t-shirt. Holy shit. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying, dude?
I know what you're saying. All right.
So we had my brother here, and I think I got one more piece for you, Leslie.
Okay.
Stay, stop swerving. I'm saying stay, stop swerving. I'm saying stay, stop swerving. I'm saying stay, stop swerving. Stay in your lane, stop swerving. Stay in your lane, stop swerving. I say
it goes on for another minute. Should I let it keep going?
No, I think we got it.
He's good, though.
He's very good.
Stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane. Stop swerving.
Stay, stop swerving. I'm saying stay, stop swerving. Stay in your lane.
He's got like a big finish here.
Stop swerving. Stay in your lane. Stop swerving.
I'll have to edit down a shorter version.
Wow, that is a lot of stay in your lane.
That's a lot of stay in
lane. But today in staying in your motherfucking lane, Brittany Farrell, Badula Oblongata, congrats to her. She actually graduated tonight. Big up, getting her degree. But she went to Sephora to get her makeup done for her big day today, and specifically asked for a black makeup artist to help her.
Esthetician, is that the right word?
I don't know if they're called estheticians. I don't think you have to have anything important at Sephora, but whatever.
Okay.
Anyways, a white person insisted on doing her makeup and did it so horribly. She looks like dead, and they ended up washing her face and then having a black person, black makeup artist, do it. And you could just, I mean, she posted a side-by-side shot of it. One of them looks like she's about to be, she's like in the mortician's office. Yeah, the other one looks like a beautiful black person.
The one looks like a white person put the wrong shade foundation on a black person.
You can see like on the corner of her skin that she lightened her up. It's ridiculous.
It's awful.
It's awful.
You know, so that might be the Suzy Card effect. Remember the thing we talked about film on this on the show when they did all the Kodachrome and all the digital photo processing was literally centered on a white face called a Suzy Card. And so maybe this white person's always seeing white faces and white people and just she can't match up. I'm not making excuses for her. She did a fucking horrible job.
Yeah, she did terrible. And then proceeded to argue with Brittany about it and was totally like, it looked great, and started throwing products into her bag and everything. It was just a horrible experience for Brittany, and it sucked.
On someone's special day, that's correct. The worst. Thanks.
But
for
independent
that.
Of that, so Brittany posted this, and a bunch of black women started having a general conversation about how difficult it is to find, especially foundation for us, and how brands that now have expanded lines for dark people.
There was an image who put it up there of 32 different foundations that came in a set.
Yeah,
and I think there wasn't one as dark complected as you were.
No.
Anyways, out of 32.
That the companies that do have lines that are appropriate for black people, either are for black people exclusively, or were pushed through public pressure and people like Queen Latifah to have a whole line named after them, like CoverGirl. Otherwise, they wouldn't exist at all. Okay, so to me, that's like a perfect conversation to be having on Twitter. You got masses of black women all sharing their same experiences, some giving like, I use this, that, others just talking about how this struggle has, you know, how it appears in our lives and how it's just one more thing we have to deal with on a regular basis, and so on and so forth. And for some reason, white women took this as some reason they needed to chime in.
Oh, wait, plural? I saw the one. There was more than one?
They're everywhere. Fucking everywhere. It's a consistent fucking thing. It's disgusting. Like, literally, all up and through my mentions, basically any women that was talking about it.
Like what? Like, was it the, like, odious sort of like, oh, I think you should do this and you could do that? Or what was the purpose? What was the commentary about?
Them.
Well, that's we do that. We white people. That's a given.
Yeah, they just are. Yeah. What's your point? A white woman who normally does her own makeup probably isn't the best at doing a black woman's. That was what one.
That's
white,
equivocating the.
That's what one white person.
The circumstances.
Had to say. Another one says
and completely negating Britney's feelings.
But at Sephora, they just have this machine that color matches you. Just saying.
Oh, just saying.
Just saying. Huh,
like, meaning you could have gotten your own foundation. Why didn't you? Despite this being your big day and you're trying to have somebody do your makeup for you.
And also, as if technology can't be racist as fuck anyways. The point is that both the if it was used, I do believe it was, the technology is fucking racist and false in terms of serving black women and women of color. And the fucking technician, the makeup artist, is just as culpable, because I'm sorry, but if you did that to my face and then tried to tell me that it was great, it's like, don't piss on me and try and tell me it's raining. Like, fuck you.
Well, and there's, you know, I'm not saying how it went down, but like, you know, you can just like, I think it's not the end of the world if I'm a white person and you come up to me as a black person to do makeup to say, hey, you know what? To be honest, I haven't really done many black women's makeup, and I'm afraid I might.
They asked for a black person, and this white woman insisted, "No, I can do it."
Oh, come on!
They asked for a black makeup artist in the first fucking place.
Oh, for shit ass sake! You know, and here's the thing to all these people commenting, and this is a more a general statement for anyone that ever listens to this show. If you're a white, not even white, if you're a, how should I say this? People ask me, they'll say like, what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? And they'll want me to interject on a conversation or an issue or something involving a community, frequently black folks. And my patented statement, not patented, I don't know if other people say it, but just me, I say this every time and it fits every cause. I do not have any input on intra-community dialogue for communities with which I'm not a member. Okay, I just, there's nothing I need to say or do. They don't want or need my opinion. If it's asked and solicited from someone I know that's like, hey, I really, really want your opinion on this. Sure, of course I'd give it. But on Twitter, like some random person's like, you know, what do you think about black people using the N-word? No. You know, never going to fucking have anything at all. And I would say as a cis, white, het, male, like that, I'm all of them, right? So I don't have dialogues about what women should and shouldn't do with their bodies and fucking reproductive and sex. And she's like, nope, not gonna get in it. I'm not a woman. That's, you know, they got enough men telling what to do, you know, LGBT community. And like, I think of it like, if there were two people talking about something very personal to them and they were just having the dialogue about them, why would you fucking come in and have anything to add to that? And this is like a slightly more macro scale of that. They're a group of individuals with which you are not a member. Right, by whatever tribe you want to describe it, you're just not a part of that community.
Right,
and they're having a discussion about their community. You just like don't do shit. Like just no,
mind
stop.
Mind your business.
Yeah,
and as Matt just said quite eloquently, stay in your motherfucking
stay
lane.
Your fucking lane. And I'll say this as a again cis white man and trying to navigate the Twitters and shit. I observe those conversations. I try not to consume them. You know, I don't like storify and do things with them, but you can read them. You know, it's on Twitter. It's public. But just don't fucking don't just stay in your lane. You're right. Mm-hmm. You're right about that.
Stay in your motherfucking lane. Stay in it. And when you're put back in there, don't just go. Just go and stop.
And be done.
Yes. Okay. Moving on to Dope Black Girl of the Week.
Mm.
British African actress Zanib Jah has just been cast in the lead role of Hamlet, Shakespeare's Hamlet, at the Wilma Theater in Philadelphia.
Nice.
Very exciting. She's one of the first, actually the second, black woman ever to play the conflicted Prince of Denmark, making history in the theater world. The first was at Yale Repertory Theater in 1992. I just want to read what the casting person said. The director said, I knew I needed an actor who possessed great presence and could easily transform on stage. I made a list of actors I would like to see working with me, and it eventually became very clear that Zanab was going to be my Hamlet.
Very nice.
So,
and fucking like cool. 3-2-1 to the fucking racist dickbag start complaining about Hamlet wasn't written for a black woman and bullshit, dude.
I'm sure they did.
That's again white fragility. That's like one of the triggers. Like, oh my god, it's not white enough.
Mm-hmm. As always, we follow up a dope black girl with
God damn it. Fucking white people.
Fucking white people. So everyone's favorite.
No, white dudes we always
Yeah,
know.
White dudes.
A dumbass white dude.
Everyone's favorite pharmaceutical fucking douchebag, Martin Shkreli. So he famously raised the price of, I think it was a cancer drug by 5,000% after he got the rights to the drug. Yeah. He's been arrested, but I'll let this play.
Martin Shkreli was called the most hated man in America after he raised True. The price of a drug that was used by AIDS and cancer patients. This happened back in September. It went from $13.50 a pill to $750 per pill. Well, now...
I just say that again. $750 a pill? The fuck this guy.
Shkreli has been arrested by the FBI. He's charged with securities fraud related to his days as a hedge fund manager and the head of another drug company. Now, according to federal prosecutors, Shkreli allegedly took $7.6 million in cash and stocks from his previous drug company to pay off old debts owed to some of his hedge fund investors. CNN Money correspondent Christina Alessi is with me now with more detail.
And that's all you really need to know. He robbed Peter to pay Paul, got arrested, and they did not seize the Wu-Tang album, which is kind of a bummer. Would have been nice to see the...
I heard that somebody filed a Freedom of Information Act asking for it. I'm not joking. They're like demanding now that he's been in, that he's been under investigation to see the Wu-Tang clinic. Yeah. So stay tuned on that one.
This guy's just such a... And I'd love to talk more and make fun of him. They had the whole... there's memes going on like Shkreli Shank Redemption. Because, you know, Martin said he was going to try and get Bobby Shmurda out of jail.
Right.
Like he had a whole like open diatribe like, I'm from Brooklyn too. And so people are making like Shkreli Shank Redemption, so forth and so on.
Yeah, he's from Brooklyn too, but he's from Sheepshead Bay. So.
No, I would just say go to TG, the Black Guy Who Tips.
Oh yeah,
and listen to Rod and Karen talk about Martin Shkreli instead.
Sure, they'll be talking about it tomorrow too.
For fuck's sake, I'm just glad he got. And you know the thing that I wish, I hope happens. Because not only did he get arrested.
But they could have waited a day because then Bobby might have been out. That's all I'm saying.
One more day.
And not have to fucking do shit for his jailbird ass.
So if it wasn't long before. So I think really what I'm trying to articulate is I believe his.
The children are our future.
His getting taken down now is a direct retaliation to his being the most vile face of capitalist greed, right? Like being the poster boy of capitalist greed. Had he not done that. The shit he did, he would have got away with, and other people get away with, and there'd be a slap on the wrist, and like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and they were literally like, before he was reviled, he was like, oh, he's the Prince of Wall Street, and he's so brilliant, and he's worth $500 million before he was 30, and it's like, you know, there's just a lot about him that's I can't stand, and he is the public face of like capitalist greed, and that's why he's got arrested, which is it's almost like, hey, listen, he's not. He wasn't that bad until he got like he did the like end zone dance. He got the penalty for celebrating too much. It's like, dude, you raised the price. If you had raised it 500%, like every day for 10 days, maybe you'd be okay. But 5,000% in one swoop, no, we got to get you with the
He's
SEC.
He's a dick, dude. That guy's a dick, and there's just no end to it. I did read that after he got bailed out. He did like he went home and live streamed, and I was like, Once a dick, always a dick.
You got Periscope is fucking arrest. I'm still here, bitches!
So, TV movies. What were you into? We watched Childhood's End, which I hadn't read that book, but you were pretty psyched about it.
Yeah, I liked the book a lot, and I thought that the sci-fi show, I thought sci-fi did a really good job with the material. They kind of half-assed them towards the end, like the third chapter, but I thought they did a good job. I wasn't mad at it. I thought it was good. I liked it. The special effects and
the special effects were very good.
Yeah, and it's an Arthur C. Clarke, and they did like because it was written in 1950, so they did some appropriate updating of it. It was good. I really liked it.
It was pretty good. And we also saw Star Wars. We're not going to do a review because you can listen to either Movie Trailer Reviews did a great review, and the Black Guy Who Tips Premium also has a really great review of it. So we won't need to go into it, but we've loved it so much. We saw it twice, and we might see it a third time. So
yeah,
how about
I'm committed to that white genocide. I'm going to go see Star Wars 3 more times because it's a war on whites. Every time you see Star Wars, a white baby does not grow up a racist.
Right.
That'd be nice if that was the case.
It would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be.
And then we've been talking about the movie Concussion. I think it comes out Christmas Day, so we'll probably see it next week, probably.
Yeah, and I don't want to say it's weird or if it's like deliberate, But so I get Sports Illustrated. I think I've talked about it on the podcast because it's like, you know, 52 issues for 14 cents. But it's the last maybe like two or three episodes have had various articles that, I don't know, had like some kind of like, I wouldn't say like pro NFL spin. Like I definitely think Sports Illustrated, they can't. Like, they used to have a TV show on ESPN about football, and there had, like, a scene where, like, the, you know, LT character was getting cocaine in the fucking garage and shit, and fucking NFL's like, nah, you're done showing that. That show is no longer on ESPN. And so they carry Monday Night Football. So they're definitely, Sports Illustrated's in bed with the NFL in some degree. And so they're not going to come out really, really, you know, like, one way about concussions and CTE and trauma. But so the pieces they've had have been, I don't know, just kind of weird, like almost in disguise. Like you wouldn't think each one, and I'm sure people reading it are like, oh, that's not really, you know, you're reading them into it. You're being like a conspiracy theorist. But they've all had some sort of like, just a little bit of a hint that was like, okay, this, you know, concussions aren't that big a deal and people are kind of overblowing it. And, you know, I don't know. It's just been interesting reading the various issues. And it seems like each, like even this last issue, like it wasn't the big article. It was the Dan Patrick does the, like, you know, ask Dan. He asks like 10 questions.
Right.
And it was with Deion Sanders.
No, it was
with
Michael Irvin.
Oh, Michael Irvin. And but even the questions were like, you know, do you think this is a problem? Oh, you know, we're doing something about it. Like it's, you know, it's much better now.
He was like, so-and-so's dead and so-and-so's really bad off and this person can't even talk and Jimmy Dorsey thinks something's wrong.
I'll just say this.
But we're doing stuff now, guys.
I'll say this. If you are going to have the Dan Patrick piece, and you're going to have somebody, you know, like, and I guess it's always a sports person, but if you're going to ask a football person about concussions, like you could ask Dan Marino this week, right?
You could have had an expo, you could have asked
Jim McMahon. You could ask some people that are struggling with some shit, or you could ask a guy who's totally healthy and gets paid to be on Showtime's Inside the NFL and CBS's, you know, midtime halftime show. Like, I'm not saying that he's in the pocket of the NFL, but he kind of is. Like, he's not going to be able to, like, shit on them, even in Dan Patrick's thing. So it's been a lot of that kind of stuff. And I, like I said, I don't know if it's, like, a big deal. Maybe somebody else will figure it out and talk about it. But it seemed like the pieces were all very, just slightly tinged in a pro-NFL manner, which I thought was interesting that they were all coming out right before this big movie Concussion.
Yeah.
Why are you laughing?
Just laughing at something else. Anyways.
Sure you were. Laughing at something else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what up? What's the rest of our... I'm on sabbatical. Are you going to be like... Are we going to do some more shows next week? Or what's
you want to do extra podcasts?
We could. We could try that.
Yeah, I'll be able to do some podcasts.
Maybe we can get some. I think that Clove and Shirley are going to be on holiday as well. So maybe we could do a little Chonilla John mix up. Maybe we'll
chat
about that. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what we could do. We'll figure it out.
Chonilla John.
The interracial.
Jason, man, that was me and Clovisaurus. Yeah.
What are we going to call this episode, though?
You wrote it down in the beginning.
I did?
Yeah, you said, oh, that's the name of the episode. You wrote it down.
That was a different episode.
That wasn't today.
Nope.
I know what we're not going to call it.
What's that?
Amy.
I was going to call it By Amy, but...
You want to call it By Amy? You can call it By Amy.
I don't know. I'll think about it.
I think there's... For me, a very real, we're just giving her attention.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like I said, we're never talking about it again. This is the last that you will even discuss it or have any conversation about it again. So I just wanted the record straight because she's full of shit. And
I'll say, we didn't talk about it at the time we were talking about this on the show, but it still has been, I don't say weird for me, but so like, you know, like I don't really give a fuck about her. Like she's just a person on Twitter.
Right.
But there are a lot of people that look at the handle Very White Guy and are like, hey, you know, what should we do? What do you think? Have you seen this? Like there was some expectation of action through that profile, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know, and even when we first talked about it.
Well, because you normally would say sure, something about
something like this. I've intervened in various, you know, instances. That happens all the time. People, hey, you know, help me with this person or that person. And it's usually not quite like this. This was like a nuclear level fucking fire, I guess.
Right.
But so I said last time, like, when we talked about it, like there was some sort of like, geez, do I call her in, cut her off, call her out? Like what?
Right. You know, that's what we talked about last week.
Yeah. Last week I struggled. Like what, you know, what should I do? Should I, if I cut out everybody that was doing problematic shit, I wouldn't have, you know, many people in my life. But as her problematic shit got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse, and then she cut you out, she blocked you. Like for me, the decision was pretty easy. It was like, okay, fuck it. Like I just, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, be in relationship with her. This, you know, but I felt even somewhat, I don't say like obligated is the wrong word, but I do think there were some people that expected to be like, okay, you know, if you're gonna do this, rather than just like sweep it under the rug, right? There are other people I care about saying like, hey, you know, speak up about this. She needs to be stopped. This is crazy. You know what I'm saying? So even in doing that, there was people on every side of the aisle. They were like, oh, you know, you were too nice to her. You should have cut her out sooner. This is stupid. Look at you centering on, you know, you're white trying to talk to another white person. You're both dumb. Like, it was just kind of like fucktarded like everywhere.
You can't, you know, I mean, it is what it is.
Like I said, it was new, unique to me on my Twitter experience, having fucking somebody that, like, you know, I guess I kind of know, having this level of a... And I don't want to say, like, it does feel like, oh, you think I'm racist? I'm going to show you how fucking racist I am. Like, it does seem that the holes that she's digging is getting deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper.
Sure.
Or she was already there the whole time and it's just been one long 4chan con trolling fucking extraordinaire. Mm-hmm. But I feel a little bit like, okay, you know, I spoke out whenever. And I even asked her to private DM days and days and days ago. Like, I don't feel bad cutting her out because she's really kind of like cut out worthy, like, you know what I'm saying? And nor do I feel bad calling her out, but there was a period of time where I was like, I don't know, like I feel kind of, what should I do? I don't know, I guess white problems.
Yeah, exactly.
when to cut out or call in crazy cousin Cletus.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
And I definitely held on too long, but I'll do better.
That's what it is.
Good night, everybody.
High five.